Hello and welcome to episode 39 of Chips of Chull, and my name's Neil. This episode we are looking at a few little bits of music news. We recorded this just after episode 38, the post-tour podcast. If you could take a moment and follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, and like and subscribe and all that stuff. So here we go, episode 38 of Chips of Chulton. I woke up this morning to and read a tweet from Johnny Marr that said Andy Rourke had passed away overnight. You guys have met Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day.
I can't really recall.
We didn't really talk to him, did we?
We didn't really talk to him. He was kind of just sort of a figure in a room.
Yeah.
It's weird because, like, obviously, you know, we're good mates with Mike Joyce. And then we ended up playing a gig with Andy Rourke in New York.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Our early memory of it is that he drank our rider whilst we were on stage. Him and his band.
Yeah,
yeah, fair enough.
They've earned that.
Definitely.
But yeah, but it's sad.
Really sad news. Yeah, and he's only 59.
59's too early, really, isn't it? Too young.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think, you know, like, obviously, it takes this happening for people to, you know, come out and, you know, appreciate how good a bassist he was, you know.
Yeah, you posted a video, didn't you? What was the song he's playing again?
Barbarism.
That was the first riff that came to my mind when I was considering, you know, his excellence.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he's like quite a signature sound as well, you know. Like, if you think about, like, other kind of bassists in the early 80s, it was all kind of fretless or kind of slippery, slidey, slap bass. And he, you know, probably one of the better kind of pick bassists.
Yeah.
So, like, real inspiration as well. So, great. And, you know, obviously being in the band with Johnny Marr, it's always going to sort of feel like he's in the wings. But, yeah, he was a hell of a player.
Well, yeah, I think it was, you know, he was as important as Mike in, you know, they were equally important in that sort of very, very solid driving rhythm section. To let, you know, Marr and Morrissey do their thing over the top of it as well. Like,
for sure.
It needed that sort of solidity. Like, it's all very soft. Like, obviously, that Barbarism at Home is like a bass solo in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, like, the rest of it is so solid, you know, like like the perfect backbone to have, like, jangly riffs and, you know, sort of less crowded background for, like, obviously very charged lyrics and, you know,
lots of notes in the guitar.
Exactly.
I'm quite sure Morrissey kind of said, like, you know, the success of the Smiths wouldn't have been possible, or it wouldn't have been the same thing without Joyce and Rourke's, you know, kind of partnership backing up what they were doing. It was either in his autobiography or Sound of the Smiths that's mentioned. But yeah, it was kind of Morrissey made a kind of a quip about 50s bands or something, like, if Elvis had had them or something like that. I've forgotten how he worded it. It's been a strange one, because I think it's sort of, I hate to use this word, but garnished in another sadness in a sense, where it's probably the first time a lot of people have listened to the Smiths in a long time.
I was just going to say that.
And it's made people sort of reassess, like, well, what is their relationship with the Smiths' music now? Because you can't not celebrate it in the wake of such sad news just because of the other guy.
Yeah.
You know, and how you feel about what he's done with his platform.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably the right way of saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Because I remember, you know, I listened to loads of albums during lockdown, loads of albums I've not listened to ages, and also tried to listen to albums I'd never listened to before. And I was, like, going through, like, the top 100 albums in some fucking Mojo listing or something from the 90s. And I got to the Smiths album, listened back to, like, Queen of Dead, is like, this is fucking brilliant. And I've not listened to that album for so long. And it's just like, it's even kind of like a subconscious thing not listen to it because of Morrissey. But I love the Smiths, you know, and and I always will, you know?
Yeah. I listened to Meet His Murderer a couple of months ago, and I can hear the start of Radiohead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, in some of the guitar that Johnny plays and
Like, they're kind of the sort of the chain soaring.
Exactly. I can hear it because Ed O'Brien is basically a huge Smiths fan, as the whole of Radiohead are, and I can hear the beginning of Radiohead on that album. But yeah, they're great records, and you're right. Hopefully, it does people should listen to him. Maybe, I don't know. I think some of the Riley said, we'll come to Riley in a moment. You know, he played the Smiths and he said, I'm playing the Smiths for Joyce, Rourke and Marr here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really nice way to put it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's totally legitimate.
100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, should we mention Mark now? Should we move on to Mark? So, Mark's show, or Mark's final show at his slot, his 7 to 9 slot, was yesterday evening, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah.
Chronologically. And how do we feel about that? How do we feel about his movement away from that 7 to 9 to a bit later on?
I think he's a bit... I don't know. I'm not really sure how he feels about it, but it feels to me, from a just a purely radio listener point of view,
yeah,
like a sad thing, because I won't be able to sort of casually have it on and be like, oh, it's Riley yeah. time, you know, and maybe making dinner or whatever.
Oh, it's perfect making dinner time.
Yeah, right? And it's sad in that sense not to have and again, well, not to jump too quickly into it, but the sessions, it's going to be really sad to not have almost prime time live sessions every night, or Monday to Thursday anyway. I think that's a really, really sad thing.
Well, especially also because when they moved Laverne's show, they scrapped those sort of mid-morning live sessions as well. So it's like the live sessions are potentially going to be at 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And the, you know,
he's
the
got Beacon, hasn't he, for the first... show back.
Okay.
Like there will be a live music guest.
Yeah. So I mean, it's good that that's carrying on. But it's
it feels weird that I think sometimes it feels like, or in the past it's felt like, you know, the archive sessions and the BBC's amalgamation of sessions that they have was a really important thing to Six Music. And to not have them near-ish prime time feels a real shame. And it feels like Six Music's probably, you know, everything changes, but it's moving in a different direction away from that, which is really sad. Like, it's been great in the past to hear songs just be played on the radio live and to hear what they sound like live, bands that you might never see live as well. And just to really hear, like, the nuances and even, like, the mistakes and, you know, the fuck-ups and just the sort of, like... the organicness of it all. So if I think that's the thing that I'll miss from a radio point of view, a radio listener point of view, and that's not going to be there anymore. And obviously there are a load of other great features on there that aren't coming back. Parallel Universe, that's not coming back. I really enjoyed listening to that because it's sort of like, I've got my musical knowledge isn't amazing, but it's always really nice to frame things and like hear the detail that was written about certain albums at the time as well, like and what that sort of weird prog family tree was up to, like different members of King Crimson were doing this in 19, you know,
always what was Peter Gabriel doing this week,
exactly. I really enjoyed that, and I think Rob Hughes is great as well. They are carrying it on as well, but just not on Six anymore
as a podcast.
Yeah. So, but I, that's a real shame as well. That I won't be able to again casually listen to that, because I'm not great at like keep catching up and using iPlayer and stuff like that. So
I think this is one... I mean, I don't want to sound like I don't like change, because change is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
You got to embrace change. But I'm not convinced by the wording of this change. And I think putting such kind of long-serving, you know, champions of just radio in general, putting them in the time slot that they've been put in, for me personally, it looks disrespectful.
Yeah.
I mean, take for example, you know, Radcliffe and McConey getting moved from an afternoon to weekend breakfast. You know, that's still a big slot, you know, that slot. The 10 till 12 slot has never really been characterized in recent radio times as being one of, you know, actual kind of concentrated listenership.
Yeah.
And considering how long and how masterful both Gideon and Mark are, or what they do, I think making them kind of share 2 days and then they get 1 day off each, instead of actually just giving them like maybe like one good weekend slot each, you know, it feels like they're just kind of, personally, this is what I'm saying, it feels like they're kind of being put into a position where it's like, you know, it feels like they're being put into a purposefully tricky position.
Yeah,
I think, and one that they have to last. It feels like that moment where, it feels like the moment where someone wants to break up with someone, but they don't know how to break up with them, so they just make life so insufferable for the other person that the other person breaks up with them.
Yeah.
Which I know obviously sounds quite angry to say it like that. I think that's a good analogy of it.
Yeah.
But the thing I'm going to miss in light of, you know, change happening is, as you've just said, Andy, the parallel universe. I think if I was to profile someone who listens to radio all day, say you got someone that listens to Six Music all day, they don't change station at any point, because changing stations is a really hard habit to get into. Mm. Once you're in, you're usually in. Mm. And very few people would say, I think, you know, en masse, that, you know, well, I listen to this station in the morning, but then I move to this station at lunch, and then I'm on this station later. Things like that. You're kind of on one, for the majority of people, they're on one station. The new music element is there all day, like throughout the day. And I think at that dinner time when you're, you know, when you make something new, I think what Mark's show had was this perfect balance of new and old, where the new kind of fitted into alternative new, not the new that's being focused on in the day. And it made a parallel universe within itself that way. And it was a bit like, you're still getting the juice of listening to things you've never heard before, but it's all kind of got like a really nice veneer of like just a different place.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think that is what they will lose in this process. And I think that is, I think that's a really risky thing to
yeah. You know, yeah, I wonder whether they might have looked at like figures, and maybe enough people listen to it on BBC Sounds for it to kind of make sense.
Yeah, maybe. But again,
kind of like international listeners.
But again, though, like, I think a 10 till 12 slot feels more like a slot for a new voice, a brand new voice. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like a slot for like a really well-established, two well-established voices. It feels like they should be kind of given more of a, here, have a really great slot.
Yeah.
Maybe once a week, but a great slot.
Mm. I think it's a really interesting point, actually, and I agree with everything that's been said, just to probably play devil's advocate a bit. Do you think the BBC are... I just want to pick up a phrase you said a moment ago, was the art of radio. Yeah, maybe perhaps being lost somewhat, and the replacement of Mark's show is this, maybe they want to have a more of a podcast portfolio style, maybe sound.
They want to compete with other podcasts.
Podcast platforms.
And they want to essentially compete with music streaming platforms.
Yeah.
They want to have, like they do, they have, if you go on the Six or the BBC Sounds website and look through the Six Music sort of page,
yeah,
it does promote you more to like New Music Mix, and like it is, it's hard, you have to dig deeper for the repeats of the radio shows,
I think, anyway,
unless I'm being an idiot. But yeah, so they are definitely trying to compete with that. But yeah,
so why does Mark's show not fit into that? Because I think it kind of does, you know. You know what I mean? I don't,
it definitely does. I think it's championed so many new bands.
Well, yeah. I was going to say this, and we should probably say from a band's point of view as well, and again going back to the sessions thing, that it's a real shame that bands won't have that prime time-ish outlet for sessions. Exactly, like, where are these avenues for new bands to get a break? And not to get too emotive about it, but that's the first session we did, and his interest pretty much saved us.
Yes.
Like, that was the biggest thing we'd done by far.
And it completely got the ball rolling for everything else we've had, any other connection we've had with Six Music.
And for BBC Radio. And for our own belief in what we were doing, which obviously changes your attitude towards what you're writing in a way, and to go, no, there's something here. Because, you know, looking back on how we've developed as a band over the years, we've been saved by songs on a pretty much half yearly basis. In those early years, you know, a song would come along which just makes you think, all right, don't get complacent just yet.
Yeah.
Or don't get cynical just yet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've just
this
written
is worth doing. Yeah.
Fester or something like that, or you know, or The Ink, or you know, whatever else, or you've just changed your name.
Oh, that did it.
Yeah. You know, but you have those moments, and then, you know, you've got Riley's approval, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, you see, these things are possible. You know,
yeah. So it's gonna be a real shame for bands to lose that outlet, and to for Mark to have less of an opportunity to overtly support new bands, because like you said, that has a domino effect, not just sort of like industry things, but like giving you confidence to keep going. Like, someone very established in the industry likes you and thinks you're doing something right, which can really push you on. You do need that. You know, it's belief in your own art is difficult. So it's always easier when someone tells you it's good and is willing to give you a break.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, Yeah, I mean, especially early, you shouldn't really have belief in your own art until you're like, until you know you're a champion of something.
I don't think anyone does really.
Well, no, some people do. No, some people do, and they do from day one, and they can fuck right off.
Yeah, I feel like anyone worth their salt probably doesn't.
Wouldn't trust it.
The other topics we had was this, the footage of the view. So maybe just on a bit of a lighter note. That was just, you all saw that, didn't you?
Yeah.
View, fisticuffs on stage at Death.
Bit more than fisticuffs.
It looked like he
properly has him.
It looked like one of the guys, well, like the singer kicks over the guy's beer or something, or he does something. So
the Barney was that it was, they were playing a song that I believe the bassist was meant to be lead vocal on.
Right.
But then Kyle took the initiative and just sang it anyway, stopping the bassist from singing it.
So at
the end of the song, the bassist kicks his microphone stand.
That's it. Okay.
And then Kyle just goes absolutely hell for leather.
And
goes on a rant about it afterwards.
I've not seen that bit.
I think whether he said this on stage, whether it was just repeated on social media, I don't know. Having a rant about the fact that the bassist isn't good enough to sing, like he can't sing the notes, basically. Going on about it like that. It's like, you know, like if you can fucking sing it. Yeah, like all that lot going. Then I think they played this. Didn't they play the next night in London?
No, they cancelled it.
So they cancelled that. But did they get back on? Did
I
they
don't
do
know,
gigs?
Actually, I'm not, I've not no, even looked. We should have done the research on that.
Yeah, I think the Twitter, the tweet, sorry, from the View's official account was basically saying we're not playing in London tonight, but we'll reschedule. So they're hopefully trying to somehow make amends for that.
You can't go. I mean, that was assault. It was properly.
It was really, but I suppose the irony of it, you know, you'd probably find the ticket sales would go up. You know what I mean?
that was a cynical view that I had.
There we go. Yeah.
If you're going to have a fight on stage, I mean, you know, and let's be honest, were they playing deaf, weren't they?
Yeah.
Like it's okay. So they've made a statement about it as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry to the fans at our show in Manchester and everywhere else that everyone else that we've upset. We had a brotherly bust up that went too far.
Wow.
Yeah. And we can't wait to get back touring in November and throughout the festival season.
They're gaslighting us.
Yeah. I just feel, like I said, the cynical thought in me was that they did it on purpose because they knew people would film it and it would go viral. I don't think they did, though.
I suppose it's a weird one because it's not easy to, you know, to tour at that kind of level because they're not getting paid a lot, are they? So they're going to have to do it for love of it.
You think, like, 15 years ago, they were massive.
Yeah.
And this is their comeback tour, isn't it?
Yeah, they're playing Deaf Institute in Manchester, which, all respect to Deaf Institute, it's not massive, right? They're not going to make a living off touring venues that size.
How much are the tickets?
Well, true. I don't know, but it's not...
Yeah, they might have been 40 quid.
Could have been...
40 quid.
Just imagine that.
But 20, yeah. 22 maybe.
You know what I mean? But they're still not going to be able to do that tour and sit off for the year.
No.
So they're going to have to do it. Like what we do for the enjoyment of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
we don't enjoy it.
We don't smack the shit out. What are you saying, Rob?
So she's
coming for me.
Yeah. So it's just, I find it. Why have they even bothered?
Gonna kick your mic stand when you start singing those threads. those threads back of vocals. Come on, you want some? Yeah. I've got those two beats. I'll just be hitting your head like a coconut. You want some?
Yeah, sorry, just to look at the, well, I don't call it a fall from grace because it was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
The fall from grace
began when the drummer's criminal record stopped them from ever touring America.
Well, yeah. But they had a number one album.
Wasn't that Hardfi?
Number one album.
No, I thought it was
the View as well. All right.
Did it happen to the Hardfi as well?
Yeah.
The Hardfi.
The Hardfi.
God.
Yeah, but they had a number one album. Which is nuts. Wow. First album went to number one. So yeah,
back when you had to sell records.
Number one. I mean, that's an actual
number one.
You know, there's numbers there, aren't
there?
Numbers
there. Are thousands and thousands of those CDs.
Probably
in charge.
When I was up in Scotland having a lovely time not doing a gig, Superstar Tradesman came on at one of the venues at the festival. I was like, this is great. I just loving it. I just love it, that moment where you just reach the right age to hear that thing that like made your skin crawl at the time. I was like, nah, these guys have got it.
Yeah.
Sign them up. They can still do it. They can still do a shift.
But like going back to it, why do you think they're doing it?
Why are they doing it?
Why are they doing? We do. We know why we do it.
We do it. Why do we do it? Why do we do it? We do it because
we like. I mean, you know, first and foremost, we all get on. There's no bad blood.
We all get
the
on.
Opposite. It's true.
We like it. We have a good time.
Yeah,
don't
exactly.
We?
So we're making music we like.
Yeah.
So
and we enjoy it. Yeah. And we do it for the love, and it's fun. But that didn't look fun.
No,
like that doesn't come out of nowhere as well. Like,
getting battered really does.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yeah. I just don't know, like what the reason is. It, I don't know. Is it sort of like, you know, it's sort of an addiction to doing it? You do it because you can.
Mm. Or is there like a feeling that they could get back to where they were?
Yeah,
if they started off, maybe. You know what I mean, and maybe yeah. maybe that was
the perfect start.
There's a lot
of people will buy tickets. What's it called? The Brian Jonestown Massacre, like when he started just like having fights with the crowd.
Oh yeah,
and people bought more and more tickets because they thought he would do that every night. And then I think he sort of did for a bit, but it was all very. Yeah. Like expected.
I feel like it's more to do with
ice hockey.
I think you're right. I think they see the big old fishies that are those festivals that you can't remember the name of, but there are so many of them now.
They've just got these
compiled lineups of just names of names known for yesteryear.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say names of yesteryear. I think we'd be a name of yesteryear, but names known for yesteryear. Yeah. And they just know that, well, we just get our act together. There's 10 nice little paydays here. But that's putting very cynical, intentions in their mouth.
They might have a,
take the
amazing
cynical
new
intentions
album
in your
could
mouth.
Have an amazing new album, yeah, yeah.
It's the next Dark Side of the Moon, you know.
That's your example.
What do you think they're saying about us, Rob? You shouldn't go there. You shouldn't go there.
Yeah.
We got called, you should live and let live, mate.
We got
Superstar Tradesman. Yeah. Banger.
Tune.
Yeah. We got called veterans in a tweet.
We are.
Veterans.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
That's like, I was about, all right, is that where we are?
Probably I think you've are, had to like peaked in like some like recognizable way for that to be true.
It's like a veterans. All right, okay.
You have to be in the first team to get into the vets team, don't you?
Yeah.
So like, I'm not sure I've ever been in the first team.
Just makes me like feel
vet
like
subs, vet
plus,
reserves,
like,
yeah. reserve vets.
Yeah.
To lighten the mood, do we have any funny tales of a Riley session or anything like that? That we haven't mentioned before, because obviously we've mentioned the time where Pete got in touch with him for the he got in touch with Pete for the first time and he told him to go fuck himself.
Well, I mean that
that was great. Yeah,
yeah, that was
but again, that's sort of like a symptom of how little we thought of ourselves at the time and
we
how big of a break
prank
it was.
It's
a prank. Someone would
prank call us on New Year's Day pretending to be Mark Riley.
It's pretty funny.
Oh, have we talked about the Jonah Louis thing? We must have done.
What's that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Probably
one,
have.
Well, but the one time that we did a Riley session in the old BBC building, it was in like November time, and they were just asking bands coming in, can you do a Christmas cover?
We'd been on tour for like a month.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I think they'd given us a couple days notice.
Yeah.
But we had one practice, I think, just to like... We had time for one practice.
In BBC. Yeah. Like
so everyone learned their parts separately.
I don't even know we do. I think we worked out there.
Oh my God.
We worked out in the studio.
I must have learned the lyrics somewhere because it's a bit of a mouthful. I'm friends with Jonah Louis on Facebook.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, I don't know why. I have no idea where it's come from.
Have you sent him our cover of his...
I assume he's heard it. It gets played every year.
Every year.
That's the point. Like, so we just rushed out this version of Stop the Cavalry. And now it gets played every year once.
Every Christmas.
We nearly got away with it not being played this year. And I think it was played like the very edge of acceptable Christmas music.
Yeah. Christmas Eve, 11:55. Bang! We're in.
It was all that, wasn't it?
Like so fast as well. Like how fast we did Grace Jones as well, Saved to the Rhythm. I think we put about 20 BPM on it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, why do we do this to ourselves? That's why we had to cover The Rat. It's the one thing we can't speed up.
It's true. Cool. I played it slower than it is on record. Yeah. Yeah, but yeah. So like every time it's played on Six Music, there's always people saying like, what is this? Why do this? Why do this cover? It's like, yes. we didn't want to. Yeah. We didn't want it to be played every year for the last 12 years, but it just is.
Brilliant. Some sweet PRS to John O'Leary.
I know. Yeah, he'd be loving it.
Yeah. Yeah. £50.
I'll send him a message saying, you're going to thank me, yeah?
Yeah.